It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and today we're going to be talking about health insurance open season. And to help us do that, we have, I'd like to welcome back to Fed Talk Walt Francis. Walt, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
And just a reminder before we get started, Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. Now, since we are going to be talking about open season and health insurance and trying to figure out for you what the best health insurance option is, please feel free to give us a call. You can call us at 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Walt, you've been on Fed Talk. I think you're here every year just about to talk about your book, The Guide to Health Plans, the checkbook. But tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get in this business?
I was a federal employee. I'm actually retired Fed. And shortly after I had my first child, I discovered that other people in my office had a less expensive health plan than I had that would have covered the childbirth just as well. And I said, holy cow, what's going on? So I started comparing health plans for myself and then for coworkers, like at lunch and so on. And I sort of did spreadsheets. But in those days, we didn't have computers, you know, to do it, but we could do it with a calculator. And I finally went to Checkbook Magazine and said, hey, I've been, you know, talking to other federal employees about how to pick plans. Why don't we collaborate on something for the whole shebang? But meanwhile, I kept my federal job, and I worked more than a quarter century in the Office of Secretary of Health and Human Services, analyzing regulations, among other things, writing legislation, doing all kinds of policy work. But this is my avocation, doing the consumer advice.
So you write for the Washington Consumer Checkbook. It's called A Guide to Health Plans, and federal employees can pick it up where? At their bookstore?
They can pick it up at the local bookstore. I used to say Borders or Barnes & Noble. I'll say Barnes & Noble now. But the best way to get we have an online tool that actually you enter a little bit of personal information, your age, family size, and so on, and then you get immediately, boing, on your computer a presentation of which plans are likely to be best deals for you and your family, quality ratings, and a whole lot more. So we recommend people go to www.guidetohealthplans, that's all one word, guidetohealthplans.org, and a special treat, a very large number of federal agencies buy a free subscription for all their employees, and a lot of times the word doesn't get out because employees don't necessarily read those boring open season emails from the HR people. So you may have free access right now at your computer, at the office, or at home.
At your computer at work.
Yeah, computer at work.
If your agency has bought into this, and otherwise there's a charge for that service.
Yeah, it's $10.95, I think.
$9.95.
$9.95. Excuse me. I should know.
So people, a lot of federal employees would have access to the entire book.
Yeah, but it's more than a book online. Think of it as a book on steroids, okay? Because you can manipulate the data, and it's very user friendly, very fast, very thorough. It's hard to explain, but it's better online. It's good on paper. Some people prefer the paper. I personally am conflicted. I like them both for different reasons.
So, Walt, in addition to years of just personal interest putting this together, you also have a career in the healthcare industry, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm something of a Medicare expert as well as an FEHVP expert. I've testified before Congress a number of times on ways to reform Medicare and the FEHVP. And I actually do consulting work for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid services. I don't speak for them at all here today, but I'm deeply enmeshed in health insurance issues.
So, Walt, what's the best healthcare plan?
Every one of them is best for somebody. That's the answer. No one best plan. It really depends so much on your personal circumstances, where you live, your family size, whether or not, for example, your doctor is in the preferred network for that plan. That's a huge issue for some people. So there's simply no all-purpose, one-size-fits-all answer. That's actually the beauty of the program. During open season, you can reassess your health. You can reassess your situation. You can look at your health plan and see if it still fits you as well as it. A lot of people get one health plan and sit there for 25 years and never look. Don't realize. I mean, the classic example of this program is all the people that have been in Blue Cross Standard forever and haven't even thought about moving to Blue Cross Basic. Same panel of preferred physicians. You're not losing your family doctor, and you can cut your premium by over a third.
What's the difference?
There are a lot of small differences between the two plans, but they're basically both very good, very comprehensive insurance plans. The key difference, the big difference, is that in Blue Cross Standard, you can go out of network if you're willing to take a hit, because it's a relatively low reimbursement rate in real terms, probably half or less. But in the Blue Cross Basic plan, there's no out-of-network benefit. If you do go out-of-network, you can always do it, of course. You'll have to pay the entire cost.
You pay it yourself.
Yeah.
So you just stay in network.
Set up a flexible spending account and use that to go out of network. I mean, people just aren't thinking creatively. They aren't thinking at all. Mostly. Who knows what percent think about it. But only about 5 or 8% change plans every year, and that's way too low.
Only 5 or 8%. That is incredibly low. It almost makes you wonder, why do we have an open season?
Well, that's still a lot of people. For example, on the Blue Care Basic has gained a lot of enrollees in recent years, not just from Blue Cross Standard, but from other plans.
So what changes do you see coming to the health care plans this year? What are the basic things that federal employees should be looking out for?
The changes are pretty minor, by and large. The premiums went up only 3.8% on average. Blue Cross Standard premium actually dropped a little bit, as did the premium in a couple other plans. Very few went up substantially.
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, I think it's just I don't know. It's the economic downturn has tempered a lot of cost increases that might otherwise have occurred. Plans have gotten better at managing high cost cases. There's lots of little things, benefit adjustments, tweaks the plans make. And that's the other thing. The benefit changes aren't much this year either. But this is a year where no federal employee is going to get a pay raise, but they have a way to give themselves a pay raise. They can switch to a plan that's got a lower premium and out-of-pocket. We compare the plans on the basis of total out-of-pocket costs, premium, and what you pay for co-insurance and co-payments, and we find that a typical family can save $1,000 or $2,000 a year if they go to one of the more bargain plans.
And do you see any issues with insurance plans leaving the FEHBP program?
There was a pretty big exodus 10 years ago. It's been continuing as their HMO universe has been shrinking, and there were a lot of HMO plans that have now left the program, mainly a lot of them because they don't exist anymore. But the core national plans, that group has actually expanded a little bit in recent years, because with the addition of new high deductible and consumer driven options, the number of plans available in Keokuk, Iowa, there's roughly 24 plans available. In Washington, D.C., it's maybe 28 or 29. So everyone's got at least 24 plan options to choose from.
And what about the health savings accounts?
They come with the high deductible plan.
And they're available to federal employees?
They are indeed.
And what would you say to somebody that was considering that? What are the pros and cons of a health savings account?
Well, the main thing I'd say is consider them, okay? Take a look. That's step one. When you take a look, you're going to be struck by several things if you think about it. One is the premiums in all those plans are quite low, so they tend to be, in premium terms, cost effective. They have excellent catastrophic protection. They start you off with a savings account, which is typically somewhere in the $1,000 to $2,000 range for a family. You get free preventive care the way you do in all the plans now.
That's required by the health care.
Yeah, it's actually not fully required, but OPM went ahead. OPM actively manages this program, and they said, hey, the time has come. A lot of them were free already. Everyone's going to have free preventive care. They've added hearing aids. There's always – most people probably don't know that most of these plans now cover hearing aids. But anyway, back to the if you join a high deductible plan, you get this health savings account. I want to be clear, it's not the flexible. I started to misspeak. It's a health savings account. It's money in your name. You have title to it. It goes in tax-free. It can accumulate the rest of your life tax-free. And when you take it out for health care, it's tax-free. It's roughly $1,000 to $2,000 for family. If your expenses are below that amount, then you will carry the money forward. There's no use or lose to it. It keeps going year after year. But if they get higher, you may have to pay. There'll be a deductible of $1,000 or $2,000 before regular insurance kicks in.
And then the regular insurance will kick in just like it always does.
Yeah, just like it always does. So it's sort of, it's a thing. I think it is a more frisky option than traditional health insurance. But the big difference is if you sign up with a high deductible plan with a health savings account, you want to be managing your own care. It's for the people who actively want to think hard about, do I really want that more expensive name brand drug or am I willing to settle for the generic? Because that way I won't be tapping my savings account or hitting that deductible area where I pay everything. So you think hard about, do I really need the CAT scan and so on. It's great for people who are willing to be active and think hard about healthcare costs and healthcare effectiveness.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back with more from Walt Francis on the federal employee health benefit open season.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm joined by Walt Francis. We're talking about health insurance and open season. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll free at 1-877-936-9333 or send us an email at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And of course, Walt, it's not just federal employees that care about open season. It's also all those retirees like you. You get to make a decision
right.
for yourself about what health plan, because you are a federal employee, I assume, that took your FEHBP benefit with you into
Absolutely.
Retirement.
And, you know, people don't realize the deadline for Medicare is December 7th, which is only 5 days away. Their open season ends then. And for federal employees and retirees in the FEHBP, it's December 12th, 10 days away. So there's not much time left.
So just to let our listeners know, if you are a federal employee and you're thinking about retiring, there are some rules about making sure that you have health insurance as a federal employee when you retire. Can you go over those?
Sure. The crucial thing to know, there's two really important things. One is you have to be continuously covered by some FEHBP plan or TRICARE continuously during the last 5 years before you retire. If you retire without that, you lose the plan coverage for the rest of your life on the day you retire. The other thing that's important is if at any time you die while in self-only coverage, your wife or your spouse, whichever way it goes, loses health insurance forever. So you really want to be, assuming you're married, in a family plan, even if you have other coverage, such as from your spouse, okay?
Join one of those very inexpensive plans.
Yeah, join a high deductible plan, pay a low premium, sock away that health savings account. You can even augment it, okay? You can build up a really nice health nest egg while using your spouse's insurance for your normal expenses.
So somebody loses health insurance forever, but what about when they qualify for Medicare? What are the advantages and disadvantages
okay.
having federal employee health benefits versus Medicare?
Okay, first, I think the important thing is the one you don't want to give up is the FEHBP. If you ever drop it, you lose it forever. At any before or after you retire, if you've you know, after you retire, if you drop it, you lose it forever. And it's got lots of pluses that Medicare doesn't have. That said, Medicare, you get Part A basically automatically when you turn 65.
And you have to get that anyway when you turn 65.
You have to get Social Security benefits. Part A is premium free. That's the hospital part. Part B, you have to pay the premium. It's for doctors. The Part B premium for next year in round numbers is $100 a month, $1,200 per person. So if there's two of you, it may be as much as $2,400. And it could be a lot more than that because there's something called income testing, which we'll come back on. But the point is, let's say you retired at age 60, 5 years ago, you're now turning 65. And the question is to be or not to be in right. terms of Medicare Part B. Clearly, an argument against is that $1,200 or $2,400 in extra premium you're going to pay for being covered by two different health care plans.
Because you're still going to pay the premium on the federal employee plan.
Yeah. That's the one you clutch. Right. Don't let loose of. So you're paying two premiums. And, you know, the most popular combination is Blue Cross Standard Option and Part B together. And for a retired couple, the premiums between the two programs, $7,500
a year
that you will pay if you never see a doctor. Okay, so that's disadvantage number one. That's the main disadvantage. The advantages are you get something back for that premium because most of the national plans give you this 100% wraparound deal where you won't have to pay the $30 copay for the physician visit and so on. So you'll get probably a third of your premium back for that. You also get the flexibility of using Medicare Part B out of network. And I think that's a very important gain. For example, you could be in Blue Cross Basic, the one we mentioned. It doesn't cover you out of network, and they don't even offer the wraparound. But if you have Medicare Part B, you can always go to, like anyone else on Medicare, to any doctor who accepts Medicare, and you know Medicare pays 80%. If you're in Kaiser HMO and you want, even if you plan to use only Kaiser doctors for the rest of your life, if you want that to sleep better at night, thinking you have that out-of-network coverage, Part B gives you that. The third advantage of Part B is only for another set of people who might want to be frisky. If you have Parts A and B, you can suspend your FEHVP enrollment. You don't quit. You suspend, and you can join what's called a Medicare Advantage plan. 10 or 15 million Medicare beneficiaries are on Medicare Advantage plans. A fourth of the Medicare enrollees, they love them.
Now haven't those Medicare Advantage plans been made more expensive as part of the healthcare reform?
No, actually, only slightly, but it's not been a significant effect. The Medicare Advantage plan itself was modeled after the FEHVP, so you get this very similar wide choice of plans, different kinds of plans, HMOs, PPOs, fee-for-service. Those plans have gotten increasingly good over the years. Their benefits are better than they were 4 or 5 years ago. They now all have catastrophic protection. You can often join those plans and pay no extra premium at all. Some of them charge a little extra beyond that basic $1,200 a year Medicare Part B premium. They are excellent insurance choices. The Health Reform Act they actually are subsidized a little more heavily than some people think is equitable or fair compared to traditional Medicare, and the differential of the subsidy is going to go down over the next few years, but it will not change the basic picture I just laid out. The beauty of that option is, if you have a problem with your Medicare Advantage plan or you decide you really want to go back to the FEHVP next open season, you lift your suspension, re-enroll in whatever plan you choose.
Isn't that a little risky for somebody that's listening to this? The difference between suspension and termination might not be clearly understood.
Well, you have to call OPM and deal with them. You have to call their phone number and talk to them about suspending, and they'll make sure the paperwork's done correctly. So it's in fact not risky, but yeah, you got to do it right.
So what if you're still working as a federal employee and you turn 65, you sign up for Medicare?
Do you care about what
don't you have to sign up for Part A?
You don't actually have to sign up for Part A until you start receiving Social Security benefits. So that's sort of a separate calculus. But yeah, it's costless. So you might as well sign up for Part A. But don't sign up for Part B yet.
And why not?
Because when you're still working, Part B is what's called secondary to your FEHVP plan. It only pays extra if there's some expense your regular plan doesn't cover. But Medicare actually is very stingy in the way it calculates that. Most people get nothing back from Medicare Part B while they're still actively working. Now, as soon as you retire, and by the way, Normally, there's a penalty if you don't sign up for Medicare Part B when you're first eligible. It's a 10% of your penalty. You can re-enroll. Unlike the FHEP, you can always come back to Part B, and that's another reason why you could. That's actually a reason for not signing up for it necessarily. But the while you're enrolled, there's no while you're under 65. Excuse me. While you're still working, even if you're over 65, there's no penalty. So there's no need to sign up until the time you actually retire.
So once you stop working and your health insurance basically covers you as a retiree, you better get Part B if you ever think you want it, because you'll have to pay more of a premium later on. So you said you were going to get back to this means testing or this testing for higher income people for their Part B premiums.
Medicare program now has, at the low end, people, by the way, who are very low income can get subsidies for their Part B premium, and they can get subsidies for their Part D drug benefit premium. Leave that. There aren't going to be many federal retirees in that situation. But at the higher income end, if your adjusted gross income, and for 2012, they look back to 2010. If your AGI, it's on the bottom line of your form, first page of your form 1040. If that number for self only, for a single person, is $85,000 or more, you will not just pay that regular, that $100 a month Part B premium. You may pay double or triple that amount. And for a married couple, the income threshold is $170,000. Those numbers are not indexed to inflation. That's another slight change made. Well, it's a major change made by health reform. So if you're, you know, two high earners retired, you know, two GS-15s retired, your pensions are going to be more probably, and other savings and, you know, money you spend from your thrift plan and so on will probably
be more than $170,000.
Yeah. So you're going to need to think real hard about whether it's worth paying that extra premium to sign up for Part B.
And that's $600. For husband and wife, $600 a month?
It can be.
Can be, because it's triple.
Yes, it could even be a little higher than that. So
it could even be higher than that. But that $170,000 figure is not going to be indexed for inflation. So
Now the premium doesn't get that high. If your retirement income is $171,000, I don't remember the exact number. You may only pay $150 a month each, you know. But if it's a multiple of that, you're going to pay a lot more.
You're going to pay a lot more. So it's something to be aware of as you make that to be or not to be decision. One of those things, and it seems very complicated.
It's like anything else in life that's important. There's some pros. There's some cons. I tend to recommend to people figure out if it will make you sleep better at night to have coverage from both programs, and if it really will, then for heaven's sakes, take Part B.
So, well, one of the things you hear a lot is that, especially with the healthcare reform debate, is that to try to get as many people on health insurance as possible, there was trying to get an economic motivation because supposedly younger people aren't as interested, don't care as much about health insurance because they're healthy. Older people do. Now, is there anything about FEHBP, do you think, that encourages people? Do most federal employees have health insurance?
Yeah, the great majority. But there's sort of a little scandal. There are probably 10% or so who simply go bare, go naked, as it's called. And they tend to be the young, the immortal 20-somethings, okay? And it's a serious error on their part, because there's plenty of low-premium plans around. So, you know, the premiums are tax-subsidized, but, you know, your share as well as the employer's share. And it's kind of silly to take the risk of, you know, walking down the street, getting hit by a truck, and find you have $100,000 medical bill.
And I assume a young couple is, you know, has a baby, and then, you know, they don't have health insurance. That can be a very expensive pregnancy.
Yep. So one of the advantages of the FHEP is there's health plans to suit every family style, so to speak. You can pay more for more expensive coverage and more out-of-network benefits and so on, but you can buy quite basic coverage to cover you against the worst.
It seems to me also that one of the main reasons for having health insurance is if you go into the hospital to have some kind of a medical procedure, you don't have insurance, you're going to get a pretty large bill compared to the bill that you would receive if you had health insurance.
Yeah, all the plans negotiate preferred provider rates, not just with doctors, but also with hospitals and other providers. And you want those preferred provider rates, as well as you want to have either minimal coinsurance or copays. It's really foolish not to sign up for health insurance.
So, and of course, now it's open season, December after December 12th. If somebody doesn't sign up by then, they can't sign up till next year on open season.
Well, there are a few exceptions to that. For example, if you get married, and so, there's a few outside. You can have a little private open season for certain life events. But basically, if you don't do it by December 12th, you're going to wait a year. That's right.
And, of course, you can sign up for health insurance shortly after receiving your job. And I think most new federal employees are adequately informed of those options.
Well, I hope they are. I'm not positive they are.
All right. So, again, Walt, you've got all of this explained in your book, A Guide to Health Plans, on the Washington Consumer Checkbook. And federal employees can get that where?
Best way, you can get it either online or paper by going online to guidetohealthplans.org. Which is one of the checkbook websites, or you can go to the local bookstore and pick up a copy. A lot of them carry it.
And who should they check with their agency to see if their agency has purchased this already for them?
Best way to do that is to go to the guidetohealthplans.org website, and right on the home page, we have a list of all the agencies that have or have subscribed, and you can check very quickly to see if your agency has done that.
Okay, we have to stop here for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on health insurance and open season. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're talking with Walt Francis, who has all the information you need to know to make a decision during open season on your federal employee health benefit plan. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-936-9333, or email us questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Walt, it seems to me one of the big questions I think a lot of federal employees would have is that, you know, they have a relationship with their doctor. If they change plans, does it make a difference with their doctor? And some doctors don't accept all plans. How does that work?
Well, it works. It's a big problem for lots of employees. Or your doctor may be preferred in your plan this year, but come January is not going to be in the network, okay? And what if one of your doctors is preferred in one plan and your other in another plan, and so on? There are a couple things people could do. First, I think for anyone for whom that's really important, call your physician's office right about now and ask, will Doc Sawbones pick the plan you're in, Aetna, Blue Cross, GEHA, will he still be in that plan's network come January 1st? Make sure you know the answer, okay? And if he's not, you could ask, well, what plan networks will he be in? And maybe the answer is one of the other plans, and maybe the answer is none. In which case, you always have the option of paying someone out of pocket, or getting a reduced rate and paying a large part of it out of pocket, or you can change doctors. You have a lot of options. One of the neat things, by the way, you can use each plan has a website that shows affiliated doctors, so it's easy in a general way to look them up. The problem is that they're telling you who's in the network today, not who's going to be in the network January 1st. One of the things we're doing in Checkbook's Guide is in the D.C. area, we're experimenting this year, we actually have figured out which health plans every doctor is in. So when you go, when you use our tool, we will actually, if you can enter your doctor or doctor's names, and we will tell you which plans they're affiliated with. So what we, but regardless of how you sort of approach, get to this point, where you want to wind up is thinking about two or three health plans, if need be, just those with your doctor in them, and but pick one that overall is a better, is a better deal for you.
And how exactly, they have this calculator that tells you how much you're likely to spend or not spend. Isn't that based on whether you're sick or not?
Well, what we do, the reality is most people have some predictable expenses. You know what maintenance drugs you're on. But you don't know if you're going to have a heart attack next year or cancer or stroke or any of the really expensive bad things. This is a financial decision you're making. You're buying insurance and you want protection against the worst. What we do is we profile. We don't know what's going to happen to your health any more than you do. Okay? I mean, leave aside the cases like you're going to have a baby. You know, there are a few known things. What we do is figure out on each plan what's likely to be your cost if your expenses are low, average, or high. And we actually do, we compute it behind the scenes on a computer and come up with a number. And it depends on your family size and your ages and the amounts you pay for premium, depend on your pay system. Part-time employees don't pay the same as full-time employees, yada, yada. We come up with a number that fits your family situation, and we tell you, here's the average under each plan. Here's the sort of good year likely cost under each plan, and here's the bad year likely cost under each plan. And we find that in all those comparisons, and you typically, there are plan-to-plan variations among the 28 or 29 plans available in the D.C. area, typically $1,000 from high to low, high end to low end, more than $1,000 for self-only and more than $2,000 for families.
And do the plans have different rules if you need to go to a specialist?
In general, they don't anymore. There used to be a lot of HMOs that made you get, you know, go to your primary doctor first and so on. That's pretty much gone away. So the HMOs have gotten a lot more liberal. And the national plans, you know, the PPO FFS plans mostly don't make you check in first. But if it's something really expensive, you may have to talk to the plan before you go get that
and
service.
How is that determined? Is it?
It's in the brochure. It'll name, here's the example. Most of the plans now require pre-approval for a CAT scan or an MRI. They're not going to pay for it if you don't check with them.
So your doctor would call or you would call?
You would call, I don't know. You know, it depends on the plan, but you know, you or your doctor would call, and you know, it's usually very pro forma, but if it's the third CAT scan this year, they may decide not to approve it, and they'll certainly not make that decision without a medical consultation. But all the plans have limitations and you know, on what they pay for. I mean, no one's going to pay for elective plastic surgery and so on. No one's going to pay for care that's not medically necessary.
And what about if you travel? All your doctors are, the network doctors are in the Washington, D.C. area. You travel on vacation and you have to go to the hospital. What are there variations in the plans on what's covered when you travel?
There are minor variations. The important thing, though, to know is that every plan, including the most restrictive HMO, covers you anywhere in the United States or abroad if you're traveling and get hit by that truck or whatever. They are going to cover you for emergency care. They will typically pay for an air ambulance to bring you back to the States if need be. Obviously, if you're in Europe, you won't need that service probably, but you know, they'll pay for you at a local hospital. There are some slight variations on this theme, and it's important to also understand that they typically will not pay for routine care. Okay, if you're going to go down and be a snowbird in Florida 4 months of the year, your HMO is not going to, you know, pay for your weekly therapy visit.
But if you get sick,
if you break your leg, they'll cover the emergency care for that. Now, sometimes, though, the plans have arrangements with other plans, okay, outside the local area. Most of these networks are national.
So you can find an in-network doctor. If you wanted to spend 4 months in Florida, you could find an in-network doctor in Florida to go to.
It's an HMO sort of limitation for local area only. The national plans all will cover you for wherever you are, routine or emergency.
So can we talk a little bit about the dental and vision plans? Is this the open season for that as well?
It is indeed, and it's the open season for flexible spending accounts too, which is the money you can set aside to pay for your predictable healthcare expenses.
And what's the limit on flexible spending accounts this year?
I think it's still $5,000, but it's going to be $2,500.
It'll be $2,500 next year as part of healthcare reform.
And there's several kinds of flexible spending accounts, and there's some that cover daycare. But the basic idea is, if you have a maintenance drug and you pay, you know, $30 a month for that prescription over a year, that's $360. You could put aside $360 of your money, tax preferred. So now probably your marginal tax rate is such that you'll probably only pay about 2/3 of that. But it's use or lose money, okay? And if you don't spend it on that drug or something else by the end of next year in a couple of months grace period, you lose it. That's in sharp contrast to these health savings accounts we were talking about earlier.
Well, you don't lose it. It's all
yeah, we don't lose it. Now, the vision and dental plans, another big set of choices. They're outside they're in addition to your FEHVP health plan. You pay the entire premium.
But you get group rates.
You get group rates with preferred providers. That's very important. And that's really the key in my mind. If you have significant dental expenses, talk to your dentist about what dental plans he or she may be preferred in and accept, okay? And it might be Aetna, but not MetLife, or not GEHA, or vice versa, whatever. There's five or six of them. And for someone who has an expensive mouthful of problems, they can save you significant money. They all pay for orthodontic for your kids. Most of them have a waiting period of 2 years. There's a lot of little details you have to study up. We compare them all on in our guide. Also, there's dental benefits in a lot of the health plans themselves. So a lot of them will pay for that that annual visit for the checkup and so on. But except for MDIPA, none of them are going to pay much for the expensive procedures. Vision plans, we've got three companies and a couple of options in each.
And all of this is explained in your book?
Oh, yes. And in fairness, I mean, you can go to the OPM website, opm.gov/insure, and they have most of the information we have, but they don't do the actual dollar comparisons of how much you're likely to be out of pocket.
So somebody who's got ongoing serious health problems, goes to their doctor a lot, they would want to buy obviously a more expensive plan?
Not necessarily. I when people have some, particularly when it's like an exotic condition or something very specialized, you know, what I recommend to people is talk to the people who specialize in your treatment and ask them which plan pays better. And it may not be the obvious choice. It may be the more expensive plan doesn't even cover that particular kind of therapy, okay? Whereas the less expensive plan may cover it quite well and in their interpretation of what's medically necessary, be more generous. So I think in cases of anything very expensive or very unusual, you really want to talk to the provider first about, first, you want to know if they're in the network. I mean, what if, you know, you want to go see a gynecologist because you're going to have a baby or an obstetrician because you're going to have a baby next year, you better ask that obstetrician, what health plan are you in the network of? Because the plan, almost all the plans will pay 100% of your childbirth costs. That's a better deal than for most other expenses, but only if you're using a network physician. So check on that carefully.
Have you seen, Walt, this year in 2011, an increase in the amounts of the deductibles and the other copays, things like that?
No, they haven't changed much this year. I think we saw a fair amount of change in the last few years. Blue Cross standard option was fine-tuning, and they raised their deductible a little bit and made some other changes. But, you know, I think they figured they tweaked it enough. So changes are not the big problem, though I will say everybody should look at the brochure of the plan they're in, and they're not mailed to you anymore. You got to go online to look at them. You can look at them at our website, or you can look at them at the OPM website, or you can just go to the plan website. Okay, there's three ways. But for heaven's sakes, there's a page in each brochure that explains how we change for this year. You want to look at it. They might have just dropped the coverage that you were counting on. And you also want to look at the page right near the end that summarizes the benefits. Make sure that
summarizes all of what
all of the
always
benefits
been there. Right?
And if you're a real careful shopper, there's a section near the front where you can actually look up how they pay for catastrophic care, not with the summary number they give at the back, but the details of that, because often the catastrophic promise, the most you can pay out of pocket, may not include prescription drugs. Well, that's a pretty serious omission, or it may not cover all your copays. So you have to look behind the summary number. So that's one of the things we do on the Checkbook website. We actually make apples to apples comparisons of all the plan's guarantees.
And what about that Medicare Part D, which is prescription drugs? Do federal employees need that if they have, if they're retired with federal employee health plan?
No one needs it with the FEHBP plan. All the FEHBP plans have benefits that are better than what are called, what's called the standard Part D benefit. But they can be Part D can be valuable. For example, if an elderly couple has Medicare Parts A and B and want to keep B for good reasons, they might want to look at GEHA's standard option, which gives you this 100% wraparound benefit, a very low premium.
100% wraparound of what?
Doctor and hospital bills.
Okay.
Okay? So they'll pay nothing out of pocket for any doctor or hospital, in or out of network. I mean, it's quite all the national plans except Blue Cross Basic give that option, give that guarantee, and you're paying a low premium. So you can save thousands by that decision, but here there's always a catch. The catch is that GEHA only pays 50% of the cost of your name brand drugs. Well, fine. That's for most people, that may not be a problem. But if your drugs are really expensive and you got a lot of them.
Some drugs are very expensive.
So I actually know people, and I've counseled people, sign up for a Part D plan because that'll be primary and it'll pay first. And then GEHA will kind of wrap around it. They don't give you 100% guarantee, but they will cover you very well. And your drug costs go away.
And of course, if you don't sign up for Part D when you're first eligible, there's a penalty for that as well.
But not in the FEA, not if you're a federal retiree. Because the Part D penalty, unlike the Part B penalty, the prescription drug part of Medicare says as long as you're in a plan that has coverage as good or better than Part D, the penalty for that year is waived. So if you're that's true for every FEHBP plan. So you will never be paying a Part D penalty.
If you had a particular expense coming up, you could sign up for Part D at any time after you retire.
Yes, at any open season after you retire.
And that open season is right now?
Right now.
For Medicare as well as for FEHBP.
Right. And the Medicare open season ends sooner, December 7th. So anybody who's got a Part B or Part D issue really only has 5 days left to think about it.
Hey, we're going to have to stop to hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion with Walt Francis about the FEHBP open season. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host, and I'm talking to Walt Francis. We're talking about FEHBP open season, and we're trying to figure out what the best healthcare plan is for you. And the best way to do that is to go look at Walt Francis's book, Guide to Health Plans, which many of you can receive at no cost because your agency has already purchased it for you. Or as Walt has said, you can go into your bookstore and you can purchase it or go online, and I'm sure there's a way to get it, guidetohealthplans.org, right?
Right.
Guidetohealthplans.org. So, Walt, I think we've already figured out a lot of the things to consider and the things your book does for people to help them make the decision. But there's been a lot of talk lately about the Postal Service and how much of a deficit they're running. And one of the things I've heard is that they might come out of the FEHBP. What do you think of that?
Well, they're proposing that. I don't think they've gotten much traction on the Hill, but they claim they can administer health benefits more inexpensively than OPM does. I think that's a fairly preposterous claim. OPM is a superb manager, and the notion the Postal Service is going to beat them at that game is silly. They don't advertise the fact that their employees on average are older than other federal employees. Therefore, if they pull out, it'll And everyone's in one big pool now, so more costly people are subsidized by less costly people. Okay, that's older, younger, sicker, weller. Okay, the postal employees are older and sicker and more costly on average. And if they pull them out, it's going to raise their premium cost just to maintain existing benefits.
For the postal service.
For the postal workers be able to by 10%, by a couple of billion dollars.
Won't they be able to control those costs by perhaps controlling the which health care plans they offer?
They assume for the moment no benefit cuts, which they promise, but, you know, we some promises we believe and some we might not. Nobody controls costs better than the FEHVP. The FEHVP outperforms all large private employer insurers on average in controlling costs. It outperforms Medicare in controlling costs. It's a cost control engine. It's the plan competition, the consumer choice. Those are the engines of cost saving in the FEHVP, and you can't beat that. There's no other model that beats that. What the Postal Service is really asking for, the motive for this, and I think they're pretty clear about it, is they claim, and I'm assuming their accountants are more or less accurate, that there's about $70 billion in retiree health benefits pre-funded.
Retiree health benefits.
Yeah, postal retirees. Now, actually, they're the same as other federal retirees. They have the same legal entitlement, you know, every same open season, same health plan choices, same percent of the premium paid and so on. They want to pull all their retirees out, take back the $70 billion, which actually doesn't exist. I mean, it's in trust funds, but those trust funds are, you know, not real. It's basically a tax bit they want to
ask
for.
It's an accounting label.
It's not, you know, the way you get $70 billion is to tax American taxpayers $70 billion. That's how you get it. And take that money. And you know, they have serious fiscal problems that need solution. Don't get me wrong. They need various kinds of relief. And part of that relief should be, I think, in additional pre-funding of health care for retirees that they're being now required to do to the tune of $5 billion a year. So I think they need at least relief from that. But the point
do
I want
to
make...
Do other federal agencies have to pre-fund their retirees?
It's done a little differently. Remember, the Postal Service is supposed to be a business arrangement. They're supposed to be almost like a private corporation. They're not. The Congress never gave them the flexibility that real private businesses have. For example, they can't close a rural post office without an act of Congress. I mean, they're under terrible constraints. They're in a bad economy. They're in an internet-centric world where, you know, first-class letters being mailed goes down every year. They have bad problems that are beyond even the capabilities of the very best managers to solve. I'm not knocking, you know, they need help. Whether they need $70 billion worth of tax increases help is a different issue. Pulling out of the FHEP is not the solution to their problems. It'll actually complicate them.
What do you think will be the effect on other federal employees and retirees if the Postal Service pulls out?
Well, there's some good effects and some bad effects. The good effect is everyone else's premium would go down because so those expensive postal workers would be off the backs of the rest. But the premiums wouldn't go down much, and the real problem would be that there are roughly 200 plans in the FEHVP. They're all over the country, HMOs in Keokuk, Iowa. You know, wherever you live, you got some choices. But there aren't a lot of federal employees all over the country other than postal employees, okay? So a lot of HMOs are going to say, well, we're not going to – why would we stay in the FEHVP if half or two-thirds of our enrollees just pulled out? There is some cost to participating in this program. So other federal employees would lose a lot of plan choices, okay? The competitive forces in the program would decrease over time because there'd be fewer plan choices. There's a half dozen union plans that are among the national plan pool. There's the mail handlers plan, the American Postal Workers Union plan, the Rural Postmasters plan, the National Association of Letter Carriers plan, and I've probably forgotten one. What happens to those plans and to the people who enrolled in them when the Postal Service, if and when the Postal Service pulled out?
So that's the major concern. The major concern is that in some parts of the country, probably not Washington, D.C., the federal employees will lose their options.
They'll lose options. The purchasing pool will be smaller because, you know, a million people have been pulled out. It's a big change.
And what about the Affordable Care Act, I think it's called, the health care reform that's so controversial right now? How do you see that law affecting FEHBP?
Pretty marginally in the near term. And I always emphasize to people, you've got an open season choice. It's a choice for 1 year, okay? Make your choice for 1 year based on what's good for you. Go argue with your friends about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, however people term it. But there are a couple of changes, and I think people affect the coverage of children up to age 26. There's plenty of people who benefit from that.
A lot of people are real happy with that change in the law.
It's one of the better things. It's one of the really neat, good things in that statute. Preventive care is now totally free in the FHVP. Most plans it was before, but now it's in every plan. a baddish thing for those who really rely heavily on flexible spending accounts. The total amount's going to go from $5,000 down to $2,500. And there's this other little twist. Over-the-counter drugs are no longer covered unless your doctor prescribes them, which, you know, so, is not a...
like your doctor give you a prescription for aspirin and then you go show it to the...
That's the only way your flexible spending account will pay for aspirin. But I don't think that's a big kind of thing. Those are the near-term changes. They're pretty minor in their effects
on this
program.
And so as the healthcare reform takes hold over the next couple of years, you don't see other big changes coming to
that's much harder to predict because who knows? First place, we don't know who's going to be president or who's going to control the Congress and what changes may be made in the law. But leaving that aside, assuming nothing changes in the law and the Supreme Court upholds it and so on, there will be effects over time. The health insurance market will be affected. There is one provision in the health reform law that substantially is sort of the big bend the curve thing. The tax preference for health insurance will be limited and starting in 2018. And that
that's the Cadillac plan.
The Cadillac plan issue. And Blue Cross standard option is the test against which Cadillac plans will be measured.
Oh, really? Would that be considered a Cadillac plan?
No, I think the Congress just used it as a reference point.
But the threshold of what's covered and what it costs.
Yeah, and the threshold is what it costs. And, of course, that raises the question, what it costs may depend on what future administrations, long past the next presidential election, decide to do in terms of pressure on Blue Cross for how it changes its plan. So there's some uncertainty out there.
Okay, well, we have a couple of minutes left. I think it would be helpful. The main purpose of the show is to help federal employees make a decision about what health care plan is best for them. To go over again how they should make that decision, what they should look at.
Okay, they should certainly first think about your health, think about your family's health, and think hard about, things you know and things you're worried about and things that might be happening in the coming year. You've only got a one-year threshold you have to worry about, but that's point A. Point B, how does your health plan work with your health needs for next year and those of your family that are known? Point C, how well does it protect you against catastrophically expensive costs? Okay, it may not protect you as well as you think. It may be just fine, but have you checked lately? Have you compared it to a few other plans? Next, do compare a couple of plans. What we'd like to recommend to people is use our tool, not to pick your plan, but to figure out two or three plans that are most likely to be good for you. You may be an HMO person. You may be a fee-for-service person. We don't know where you are in the spectrum, but we show you which HMOs cost less than the other HMOs. We show you which natural plans cost less. Then go pull the brochures on a couple of those plans. Check with your doctors. There's a little checklist. I think I've covered it all. It might take you an hour or two. Some people might spend a little more time. You can use our tool in 5 minutes or less to get
your tool that if the agency's purchased it.
Yeah,
for them.
Which they may or may not have purchased for a particular user. But suppose you like the health plan you're in and you just want to confirm that it remains a good buy. That you could do in 5 minutes.
And how can they get your plan?
www.guidetohealthplans.org. And they can order it online, see if they're getting it free, and if not, they can order it right there.
Okay, so there is no right answer for everyone. I mean, it could be different for different people, but there's a lot to consider.
Right.
A lot to consider.
But not an overwhelming amount to consider.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being our guest on Fed Talk and for providing such great information for the federal employee and retiree community. We'll see you again next year. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Bill.
And that's all the time we have for our show. Remember that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.